Yeah, if we could bring the Senate Education Committee together and to order. My name is Mike Huggins, or Charlie Dunleavy, I'm not sure which it is. Senator Dunleavy is gainfully employed in finance today. With us today is Senator Gardner, myself, Huggins, Senator Geisel, and Senator Stevens. We have a quorum to do business, and we essentially have two bills today. We'll have the CS, and the first bill is sexual abuse and assault prevention, and the prime sponsor is Senator Lisa McGuire, and I would ask Senator Geisel to please make a motion.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move the committee substitute for Senate Bill Number 37, version 29LS0488/N November.
Okay, so I will object for the purposes of conversation and debate. And with that, Senator McGuire.
Is it okay, Mr. Chairman, if I bring
Yes, as long as she's her memory's working.
Right? Excellent.
But in no added pressure, I think this is a debut?
Yes.
Is that right? Okay,
yes.
We got it.
Excellent. Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the Senate Education Committee. I'm Senator Lisa McGuire, District Lima, and I have Lauren Rasmussen here with me. You all remember she was one of our pages in the Senate and now works in our front office and does a great job. She's been hard at work on this bill.
And Senator McGuire, before you go any further, you know, for those in the audience and those that are listening in, you know, that is one of the gratifying phenomenas of doing what we do, that a young person comes from someplace in Alaska. Lauren's a good example. She's probably more of a superstar than some others that we've had, but it's not the last time you see them when they come as a page or in another capacity, because they do have such breadth, depth, and potential that now sitting before the Senate Education Committee, welcome. Good to have you, and we're proud of you, and your mom and dad.
Thank you.
So, Senator McGuire, please.
Thank you for that, Senator Huggins, and we are very proud. Senate Bill 37 is known as the Alaska Safe Children's Act, and it has got a few components in it that members will recognize from a variety of bills. The main part of the bill that you have before you, Senator Huggins and members, is what we have called Aaron's Law in the past. Lauren has spent some time working with Alaskans who have also been victims of sex assault, who felt that it would be more appropriate to entitle it the Alaska Safe Children's Act. And I completely respect that. That's a difference that you'll see in this bill. We are honored to have had Erin Marin, a sex assault survivor who has been here to Alaska to testify in person this year and, of course, last year. She is on a one-woman mission that's quite amazing. She just had the 21st state sign into law, Erin's Law. And we appreciate that, but with respect to the Alaskans that have lived through this, we decided to change the name to the Alaska Safe Children's Act, and it also includes other things in it. But the main point behind it is to institute a policy and a training program for teachers, administrative staff, students, and parents on the topic of sex assault. And that's the root of the bill. A recognition that Alaska still leads the nation when it comes to sex assault on our children in astonishingly every age group and both genders. It touches all economic levels and it touches all parts of the state. What Erin's main point has been, as she's testified, and I don't know if David Holdhouse is on the line today too, he's an Alaskan survivor who has also testified in previous committees. Their main point is that at their young ages, each right around the age of 7, the two of them were sexually assaulted by people that were friends of their family, that in both cases threatened them by telling them that if they told people about the sexual assault, that bad things would happen to them and bad things would happen to their family. I feel very lucky that this is not something that has happened to me in my life, and so I rely on people who, as you know, Mr. Chairman, in our job, we deal with a lot of different subject matters, and I like to look to the people who've lived through those experiences to tell me how they would do it differently, and how we might prevent the kind of things that have happened to them in the future. And what both of them have indicated to us is they feel that if, as young people, they had had a class similar to what we have in earthquake preparedness and fire prevention preparedness, they would have had the tools to tell their parents, to tell an adult about what had happened to them in their life, and they feel they would have been better off. And that's the main point behind that bill, behind that portion of the bill, is to say that in the way that we learn stop, drop, and roll, in fire prevention, in the way that we learn to get under our desks or get inside the eaves of a bathroom door if there's an earthquake, that we would like to provide age-appropriate education for young people who may be the victims of sex assault by people within their family, people within their neighborhood, or even strangers, and have been threatened about talking about it. Why this matters to get to a young person early, David Holdhouse and Aaron both testified on the record that each of them considered taking their own life at various points in their adolescence, and both of them testified to the fact that they didn't understand this had happened to other people. It's a very isolating experience to be sexually abused at a young age when young people haven't even really learned what sex is, and then to have that thrust upon them, it's a very isolating experience, and both of them testified to the fact that knowing that that had happened to other people, they weren't alone, that didn't mean that they were an awful person, that it was somehow, in their way, their fault would have been better for them. The other part of the bill comes to us from a mother who I believe is online as well, Ms. Moore, Bree Wilson, Moore, who is a young girl who was actually in my Senate district, a standout volleyball varsity athlete, an exceptional student, Mr. Chairman and members. This young woman was in a relationship in high school where she was the victim of dating violence, and it was a ratcheting up in this relationship. It was a long-term relationship, and her mother will be able to tell you a little bit more about it, but we've been contacted from people all over our community. Lauren has dealt with this, and it, of course, it's been in the news. She was stalked and harassed, and it ratcheted up to a point where, again, this second part of the bill, which would ask for age-appropriate information to be disseminated to teenagers about teen violence, stalking, and dating violence that occurs. Girls in between the ages of 16 and 24 are four times more likely than the general population to be victims of partner violence. Violent behavior normally, and this is astonishing, but begins between the ages of 12 and 18. That's when we start to see the signs of it. Only 33% of the teens who have been in a violent relationship are reported to have ever told anyone about that abuse. And so once again, this is the second area that we're saying we educate teens right now through a variety of programs on the dangers of smoking and alcohol. Senator Giesel, as a nurse practitioner, has been an excellent spokeswoman for the dangers of prefrontal cortex development all the way up until the age of 24 and 25. We talk about the dangers of all those kinds of things, and yet something that could have prevented Bree's life if it were educated, if it were taught to children in schools, is not being taught right now. So the bill will require school districts to implement age-appropriate training and curriculum on sexual abuse and sexual assault and awareness through, as it stands right now, kindergarten through 12th grade. I know that seems young, And I know that that has been a matter that members have talked about. I've introduced this bill in the past, and it has made its way through many committees. There is a provision in here for parents to opt out, and I want to make that very clear to you, Mr. Chairman. You and I have had this conversation. Some families want to have that ability to say what their children are exposed to, but I also want to emphasize that it's age appropriate. Again, it's born out of the experiences of these young people who really feel that if they'd have been told about some of the tools that they could have used, that their lives would have been vastly improved. There's another section of the bill that was brought to me by the co-chair of finance that adds volunteer athletic coaches to the existing mandatory reporting statute. As you know, we have a mandatory reporter statute in Title 47. Not all Alaskans are required to report crimes, and not all Alaskans are required to report crimes against children, but we have a specific section of statute in Alaska law that does require people who have close proximity to children and a unique duty to report, and we are adding volunteer coaches to that. The bill would require, as it stands right now with that amendment, either 4 hours in a four consecutive week period or 20 hours in a 1 month period to receive training and to sign a form acknowledging that they have received this training. And the reason for this also, Mr. Chairman, has been born out of horrific experiences that have happened to Alaskans. Madam Co-Chairwoman has a specific experience that was brought to her in her early time representing the House. I have had experiences brought to me by constituents in both the House and the Senate. Parents who have had children that were being abused, where there was a coach. Often coaches anymore spend more time with their children than we do, and that's just a product of them being involved in extracurricular activities. And in both these cases, Senator McKinnon and I have spent time talking about the fact that these parents feel that if the volunteer coaches had had some basic education and training about how to spot these signs, they could have made those reports and they could have stopped that sex assault and violence against their children at an earlier point. There are some controversial aspects of this bill in the sense, Mr. Chairman, that we are asking for our educators, we're asking for our coaches, and we're asking for our school districts to do a little bit more with respect to our children. I've watched that over the 15-year period as I've been serving, that we've been ebbing more into this area, and I'm sensitive to placing more burdens on our school districts. And so I leave it with this committee to think about how we can gradually bring this issue into the school districts, whether it's a voluntary policy that we put in place for now and start thinking about outside forms of funding, whether it's amalgamating it into the Green Dot program, which currently exists to educate teens about teen violence and other things. I leave it to this committee to look at it, but it is a true recognition that Alaska leads the nation in all ages of sex assault and violence against Alaskans and our young people, and that they spend more time in schools. There are a couple of other things that have been added into the bill as a result of the chairman, who is up in finance right now, his request to us, and those come in the area of repealing a requirement. So we're adding a little more and we're taking some back, and that was kind of the negotiation with Senator Dunleavy that we had, that I want to point out Senator Gardner has been a part of as well, and I thank her for her work. It repeals the requirement that school districts pay for physical examinations for teachers. This is something that's already covered by their health insurance. It's an additional burden we've placed on the school districts they're asking for reprieve from. It also repeals a duplicative requirement that certified preschool teachers be fingerprinted and background checked a second time after being hired. and it repeals AS 1430-070A, which says that school districts shall provide for and require a physical examination of every child attending a school in the district. However, we keep 1430-070B in place that says that the Department of Health and Social Services may require school districts to conduct additional physical examinations it considers necessary, but they need to reimburse that school district. It's a cost savings effort for them and something that's been one of those unfunded mandates that we've had. Alaska Safe Children's Act will empower children, parents, and teachers by providing a structure for pulling the stories of abuse out of the shadows. And that's one of the reasons that I'm here to testify on this bill. Mr. Chairman, as you know, I've been a tireless advocate for those who have been abused in our state, sexually assaulted. And I can remember, as a 29-year-old, the first time I brought this subject up in the House Judiciary Committee, how uncomfortable it was for me to talk about it myself, and how uncomfortable it was for members to talk about it. And one of the things we're doing here today, irrespective of how we shape this policy, how we put this into law, is we're showing Alaskans out there that as members of the Senate that we're leaders, that we recognize that this exists. It's something that we're not proud of. It's something that, though, that we do not want the victims of sexual assault to feel shame from and feel that they're somehow responsible. And in talking about it, we're going one step further in our Choose Respect mission to try and, what I'd like to see one day, it would be the happiest day of my life, would be to wake up and see Alaska go from number one in the area of sex assault to the last one, the last place that anybody would want to come to perpetrate against Alaskans, and the last place that those who live among family units would ever consider perpetrating violence against their own family members. And I think it's a question of education. It's a question, I've used the example in the past of drunk driving, and I'll just say it here on the record again, because it's one of those cultural examples that I got to watch when I first came into the legislature, the move to 0.08 in BAC and blood alcohol levels was extremely controversial. There was still a culture from my childhood and so on in Alaska that said, you know, people can drive, they can do what they want, you know, and Mothers Against Drunk Driving came together and said, no, That's not right. They can't do that. Your liberty is now infringing on others, and people are losing their lives. We won't stand for it. And there was a directive, a mission, a cultural imperative put in place. And now, as we know, people who drunk drive are pariahs. We put them in jail, and we say absolutely not. So I would like to see the same thing happen when it comes to soul deaths of our children. When children are sexually abused by their partners within teen violence, when they're abused by strangers, when they're abused by their family at young ages, the results are absolutely devastating. And not just to mention the cost to them, but the cost to us is amazing. When you look at those who are incarcerated, when you look at those who go on to perpetuate cyclically violence against children, you'll often find sex assault in the past of those people. So I will turn it over to Lauren if she'd like to make any additional comments on the record. But I just ask that this committee, if we're concerned about the financial parts of it, which I think are reasonable, let's think of creative solutions, but let's not leave it off the table. I think it is as important as the earthquakes that we know we face in Alaska. We sit in the Ring of Fire. We know that. We can look on a map and see that. So statistically, we sit in a ring of fire when it comes to sexual assault. And we need to give our young people every tool that they can have in their tool belt to arm them and let them know that if they're being told not to tell somebody that they will be harmed, their family will be harmed, that's simply not true. And we're going to lift them up out of the shadows of that shame and that victimization. So I'm happy to take any questions and allow Lauren, who's worked tirelessly on this bill, to speak.
Thank you, Senator McGuire. It's a well done and a passionate presentation. Members, questions or comments? Yes, Senator Stevens.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman, and it's particularly appropriate that we are dealing with this bill as we're dealing with the next one shortly that has to do with parental opting out. And so I guess my question of you, I mean, I know we talk about the parents' rights and all that, but who would not want to have their child have this education? And how do you justify it in your mind that we are saying, in the next bill it talks about inquiries into private family matters. I mean, isn't that an option that someone who's abusing a child would choose not to have their child go through this program? I mean, can you help me understand that?
I don't know, through the chair, Senator Stevens. I appreciate the question, and I don't know that I can give you an answer that will satisfy your individual inquiry, because I have a similar one myself. That said, I believe that in our state we have a healthy respect for the rights of parents that I don't want to see eroded. I think that this area is particularly delicate when you think about this subject, and you're absolutely right that when you look at some of the statistics, they do involve parents. Sadly, they do involve aunts and uncles, often grandparents. And that is a devastating fact that we have to face here as Alaskans. I have accepted it as a compromise in this bill because as a Republican, frankly, I do see that philosophical line where you start ebbing too close to a police state. And for every issue that I feel I would like to have mandated, and this might be one of them for me personally, if I were to wave a flag, there is going to be something else that I would say, I don't want to see everything mandated, and I want to continue to live in a free country and a free state where parents have that opportunity to relate to their school districts and to their children. I would say this, that what my hope is as we bring up the discussion level on the issue of sex assault and teen violence. I've got one of these little rings here today that I believe you've already been made aware of, but these are excellent. Talk now, talk often, talking with teens. As a state, we didn't have these 15 years ago. I sit down with Grayson, and there are parts here that get too high level for him. It's age appropriate. But what I hope is that this isn't going to be the magic bullet. And so saying to parents, you have to do this, won't solve the problem either. So I think it's appropriate at this stage to allow parents to have those rights. But my hope is that, much like stop, drop, and roll, everybody knows that phrase, that we can somehow bring the level of awareness up that even a parent who might opt out, their children are going to be exposed at some level to the societal norm that says you don't touch people inappropriately when they don't want to be touched. And that's my hope, is that that begins to permeate throughout. But I am not comfortable as a state lawmaker allowing the state to move into that position where we take over those parental rights.
Thank you, Senator Bryan. Thank you, Senator Stevens. Other questions or comments? Yes, Senator Gardner.
A couple of questions, and one is sort of along the same lines, and I've had conversations with somebody in recent months, and you may have had the same conversation with the same person, who was, as a child, behaving in a sexualized manner at school in an age-inappropriate way. And today I know that somebody who has a training in awareness of child sexual abuse, who found out about that, might have recognized that this could be a sign that this child was being abused. But at that time, when it became known to the school, they called this child's parents, and the father picked her up, brought her home, took her out of school, and continued homeschooling her because she was indeed being sexually abused at home. And now she's out of school because they called her parents instead of being mandated reporters. I mean, this was years ago.
Yes.
So I think there is a real concern that while we want to respect parents' rights and certainly parents' information about everything that's happening in a school program for their kids or any place their kids go and are, there is a trade-off there, because the kids who most need that help might be removed from that possibility. That does happen. My question, though, for you is about adding volunteer coaches to the mandated reporters. And while that certainly makes sense philosophically, because they're with lots of groups of kids, and we often don't know very much about them, they're volunteers and all, but the statutory requirement for training says in the first 6 months of employment and every 5 years thereafter. Well, most coaches are seasonal coaches. They are running coaches or they're diving coaches. It's not year-round. You know, it's for, I don't know how many weeks each sport is, but somebody could be a coach year after year after year and never actually do the training because they're gone before the 6 months is up. And if you're a parent, very often you're a parent coaching. You got your own job, your own kids, and you do this very intensive 8-week or 10-week, whatever the season is, where, I mean, I know my husband used to coach, and during those weeks, we didn't see him unless we were at a game or a practice, unless the kids were playing with him. So, and then I don't know that how he could have found the time during that period to do the mandatory training, and then season's over and he's no longer obligated to do the training because it hasn't reached 6 months. So I just don't know the practical impact of doing this for coaches who coach just a specific sport.
So, and I'm going to let Aaron talk about this. I keep saying Aaron. My apologies. Lauren talk about this. I'm thinking of Aaron Marin. Talk a little bit about this, because this is an area that when it was brought to our office, I had a provision like this in an earlier bill. And as you know, Senator McKinnon worked with Standing Together Against Rape. She brought it to me. And we have tried to work to make it a little less onerous and a little bit less stringent in terms of the training. And so on page 3, of course, that's where you see the training required for teachers, administrative staff, et cetera, is in there. I'll let Lauren talk a little bit about it, but I think that there is, again, an appropriate tension between the kind of requirements that we put on those who volunteer within our school districts. And again, I want to emphasize that these are volunteer coaches who participate in programs where public money is used. So that's important to delineate. I think that there is a healthy tension. That said, I have been compelled by the testimony that has been brought to me by families within my own district and by other members who've been contacted, that this kind of training could help save lives, because these volunteers are on the forefront, and much like CPR training, which I suppose I wasn't around by the time I was in school, that was already required and so on. But my suspicion is there was a time where there was a member in front of a committee, much like you, saying, we're going to have CPR training. And there was probably some pushback that said, you know, is that too much? Is that too much to ask for a volunteer coach? Is that too much to put on a school district? I recognize that. And I guess what I'm here to say is that I believe in this case, the devastation of child abuse, sex abuse, and physical violence against kids is so great. Is so 1964 Good Friday earthquake great that I believe that it is appropriate to put that training in place. And that's what I'm asking this committee to do, is to hear what I'm saying, that I believe this issue is so serious that however we ratchet it back or however we want to massage it to make it easier on the school district or on the volunteer coaches, I'm willing to accept. But I think we have to start down this path, because there are these earthquakes that are happening every day in people's lives, and they are preventable. And so I'm going to turn it to Lauren, though, on the issue of coaches.
Through the chair, Senator Gardner.
Yeah, and if you would just put yourself on the record.
Lauren Rasmussen, staff to Senator McGuire.
Thank you. Continue, thank you. Please.
Through the chair, Senator Gardner. I was thinking that the mandatory reporters they get the training within the first 6 months of their hire, but I'll have to double check on that and get back with you.
Thank you. And if I might, Mr. Chair, we can wait for school districts to tell us, you know, how long their volunteer coaches are actually on there. And I do have another sort of related question that
continue.
Thank you. That maybe we can look at. But so the athletic coach, we're adding volunteer, and we're saying in a public or private school, public or private post-secondary institution, that or sponsored by a state, municipality, or other local government, or a sports team that receives public funding. So the sports team is public, but it also applies to a volunteer at a private school under this language. And I'm just thinking there are athletic clubs, and I'm thinking, for example, Midnight Suns is a volleyball league that works year-round. It's private. I don't know that they get any government funding at all, but they're year-round. They do a lot of travel teams and things like that, and they're great opportunities, but those coaches, whether they're volunteered or paid, are not, I think, covered under that, and if the intention is to be sure. And I will say the reason part of this catches me is because athletic teams, they can get very tight, very, very close with their coaches, you know, and share a lot with coaches, because partly because they work with them so intensely that the relationship might reveal things that a classroom teacher who has a student for 45 or 50 minutes every day might not ever know about kids. They see them under stress.
Right.
Yeah.
If I might, through the chair, Senator Gardner, and my apologies, we went back and forth on two iterations. My bill before simply had those sports teams that receive public funding. You're right. This includes a broader definition as I said, I'm carrying this not just for myself but for another member. So that is a discussion for this committee about whether they want it to go as far as private school or even as far as you're indicating. But you just hit the nail on the head, which is that this particular issue, and I wish Senator McKinnon were here, but if you get a chance to talk with her about her particular constituent, it is born out of just that kind of relationship that you're talking about, that often this may be the one person that really does know, and in this case it was a volunteer coach that knew that this child was being sexually abused, and the child ended up committing suicide. And that is the point, is that if there is an adult that has the ability to sound the alarm and get help for that person, then we should start doing it. And it's a question, again, culturally, of how we want to deal with this issue. And I just say that one more time, that I think in the past it's been sort of this issue of that's for the family to talk about, and we're not going to talk about those issues. And what we're saying here is a different thing. We're saying that the cost is too great. And so you're right. We are asking volunteer coaches to step into a different position. On page 3, just one other point, that Lauren is referring to the fact that we incorporated it into the training that they receive every 5 years. And you might be right that there might be a volunteer coach that misses that. And if this committee wanted to put some kind of a rider on there that said, you know, if you can't come in between that 5-year period, you take an hour training course, something like that, we'd be open to that as well.
Mr. Chair, if I may.
Yeah, please.
I used to be a mandated reporter. I was a guardian ad litem, and the training that we took was much more intensive and took more than an hour. And so even if we recognize that it's important for people to understand what they might be looking for and how they can intervene or get help, be responsive to something that isn't right, we don't want to go so far that people just plain don't want to volunteer. It's a great sacrifice, even when it brings them great joy, but we run the risk of making things so complicated or time-consuming or expensive that people just say, nah, I can't do that. I won't be the coach. I'll help.
through the chair, Senator Gardner, that is a fair point. But often, that's a fair point. We also don't want to encourage people to volunteer that might be wanting to place themselves in close proximity and control of our child. That's one point. And another point is, again, I go back to CPR because it's the best example I can give you, that that is a requirement that we're placing on a volunteer. It's currently a requirement. However, what if we didn't require that and there was a young person that went into some kind of a first aid crisis and that coach hadn't received training and we lost that life? And there they were right there on the front lines and could have helped. So I ask you to kind of think about that. And again, this is the first hearing on this bill, but that's how I've been processing this issue myself. We are asking everyone to step up. I recognize that. We are placing an additional burden on ourselves as a state and as a society to be more aware of what's going on with our children and what's going on with sex assault. No question about it. But are we doing it for the right reason? And are we doing it to save lives? And that's what I'm submitting to you today, that we are. And however much you want to ratchet it back, I'm willing to accept that because it's more than what we had before this bill was introduced.
Yeah, thank you, Senator Aguirre. Senator Geisel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm not sure I have a question necessarily so much as thoughts about some of the issues we've talked about. As a healthcare professional, I have examined children who have suffered this kind of horrible abuse, and I get the idea that we want to protect children. At the same time, I get the idea that government can't protect everyone from everything. And sometimes it's not the parent that's at fault, but the parent themselves fears reporting what they suspect is happening with their child. I've had that kind of experience as well. I have had the experience of fearing suggesting sexual abuse because of knowing what ramifications then happen to that family. And maybe I'm wrong, but they're now going to go through a very rigorous examination, not just physical, but by police as well. And so it's a huge responsibility. I appreciate what you're trying to do here. I don't oppose the concept of teachers and coaches, volunteer as well as paid, being educated in the signs to watch for, because that's information they'll use in their everyday life. That's not wasted. That's not isolated to a certain scenario that they might be working in. And it may prevent them from, you know, having additional knowledge may prevent them from making frivolous claims as well, you know, making mistaken claims that obviously there was no sexual abuse, it was a child having a bad day.
Right.
This is a very difficult area.
I know.
And so I appreciate the conversation. I'm going to contemplate where I fall on the aspects of the bill. Thank you, Senator Aguirre.
Thank you, Senator Geisel, through the chair. Very heartfelt statements, and I know that that is how members are feeling. And, you know, I have struggled with this issue myself as a parent and how I feel. As I said before, even just having this hearing is so much better than it was 15, 20 years ago. If there's somebody out there watching that has had this happen to them, and know that as lawmakers we can sit in this room and we can talk about it and we don't feel shame ourselves, and that we're recognizing this is a very serious issue and there aren't any easy right answers, or else it would have been solved already. So I appreciate your comments.
Very good. So let's look at time available. So around 4:30, 4:35 is we're going to set this bill aside. So we understand time available. We have multiple people that want to testify, and we want to give them that. We have the family of Ms. Moore that wants to testify. So, Lauren, we're not stealing your thunder. What else do you have to add? You got 60 seconds.
No pressure. Mr. Chair.
You don't need to move because we may need to respond to some of the public testimony. So continue.
Mr. Chair, Senator McGuire pretty much touched on everything that we've got in the bill. I just wanted to clarify that the language dealing with the Aaron's Law portion and the dating violence has been cleared up based on other communications in this committee. It clarifies that notices are sent to parents instead of student, parent, teacher notifications. It clarifies that training is required for mandated reporters that are in these schools, which includes teachers, administrative staff members, athletic coaches, and students. But it replaces the term employees and gets a little more specific. It also clarifies the frequency of training to comport with mandated reporter training as far as the sexual abuse.
Okay, so I'm going to ask you for homework. I'm going to give you three things, if you would.
Okay.
Number one, there's a phenomena of a teacher come from California, a principal, and we hire them in Matsu. Because of liability, if you've been reading the newspaper for the last 3 years why the teacher or principal had left there, you would hear one story. Yeah. If you try to communicate with the school district, they say, well, you know, we private matter, personnel, and oh, by the way, they can't share with you, and guess what? Same track record person. So if you would huddle with the department on that and others to just kind of give us an overview of how we address that in this context. The other one, I was amazed to read the business of rape kits in the backlog, 180 days, 2 years, and whether that has any bearing on what we're talking about. And the final one is very simple. This talks about K-12, but, you know, there's been a debate and rising information on what happens in college. And, you know, that's they're also within the bounds of the state of Alaska and whether we should worry about that or not. And the final thing is that, as you know, that it's important for us to have this conversation. This will probably be a long conversation because a lot of sensitive issues. And so I would encourage you, I'm not the chairman, I'm the acting chairman. This is probably more of a two-year bill than it is a one-year bill. So let's not get emergency thoughts on the fact that we didn't get through it today. So with that, if you would take those three items and just kind of report back, hopefully Senator Dunleavy is here next time and we can explain to him your homework and you'll do that perfectly. Thank you. But you can remain in place now. Senator McGuire, I know you probably have other things to do. So with that, what I'd like to do, and I'll just tell the committee members, you know, there's a picture here of Ms. Moore. And, you know, it's kind of a sad commentary. I'm one of those guys who likes to go to gun shows, like to hunt, like to fish. And I was at a gun show here within the last year, and the father of this young lady that you saw the picture of was doing the same thing. And I said, hey, Butch, how you doing? And he said, it's a great gun show, but he said, I'm not doing very well. And he started relating the story. So with that, if we could go to Ms. Cindy Moore online. Cindy, you there?
Yes, I'm here. Good afternoon, Senate committee members.
Yeah, and Cindy, we're raising the volume just a little bit for you. Go ahead, continue.
My name is Cindy Moore. I have lived in Alaska for 30 years, and I've raised three beautiful daughters here. First, I'd like to thank Senator Lisa McGuire and her staff for adding dating violence education language into HB 37. I would also like to thank Representative Mark Newman and his staff for drafting the original language. Today, I am here to seek the help of every legislator that sits on the Senate Education Committee. I am asking you to vote in favor of SB 37, the Alaska Safe Children's Act. Despite its alarmingly high incidence and proven negative impact on the healthy development and education of our youth, Alaska law does not mandate schools to address dating abuse. Currently, 21 other states do. Why not Alaska? The fact is that patterns of dating violence that start early escalate over time and carry over into adult relationships. As this cycle of violence continues, it deteriorates the fabric of our families and communities. Our state is a perfect example of this. Our shockingly high rate of domestic abuse, rape, and murder prove that we need to take immediate action to change the social norms about the acceptability of domestic violence. Now is the time for us to protect our children. Now is the time to stop the violence. Dating violence has affected my family in a profound and life-changing way. About 6 a.m. on June 26, 2014, my husband, pale and barely able to speak, awakened me. His hands were shaking, and in almost an audible whisper, he said, "Cindy, you need to come downstairs right now." At the bottom of the stairs stood two uniformed APD officers who somberly broke horrifying news that our daughter Brianna had been killed by a single gunshot wound to the head at the hands of her boyfriend. Since that fateful day, our lives have been forever changed, and with so many unanswered questions. How could this have happened to such a strong, beautiful, and independent young woman? Why didn't she say something about the continuing abuse we later discovered? Why did she stay? Why did she not seek help? As parents, why did we not see the signs? What I am learning is that these are all questions that can and need to be answered. I am hoping that through the loss of my daughter that I can inspire the leaders of our state to spare our young people the pain and lasting detrimental effects of abuse. You have the power to change this. Please fight for every young person in our state. Doing nothing is unacceptable. I want to read a couple of national statistics relating to teen dating violence. 1 in 3 adolescents in the United States are victims of abuse from a dating partner. 100% of middle schoolers thought that possessiveness and jealousy are part of true love. 81% of parents either believe teen dating violence is not an issue or they admit they don't know if it is an issue. Dating violence is the leading cause of injury to women. 50% of youth who have been victims of both dating violence and rape attempt suicide. 80% of teens that had been in an abusive relationship turned to a friend for help, not their parents or an authority figure. 50% of youth who had been victims of both dating violence and rape attempt suicide. The appalling statistics here in Alaska are proof we desperately need to shift our focus to prevention, because how our state is currently handling domestic violence awareness is not working. This is clearly shown by our statistics here in the state. Alaska is the most dangerous state in America. Alaska has replaced Tennessee as the most dangerous state in the United States in 2015, based on FBI's 4 major violent crime categories of murder, aggravated assault, robbery, and incidences of forcible rape. Anchorage and Fairbanks are number 2 and 3 on a Forbes list of the nation's most dangerous cities for women. Alaska leads the nation's per capita in rape at 3 times the national average. Alaska is the nation's highest rate of women murdered by men, 2.5 times the national average. 120% increase in the number of domestic violence-related homicides reported to law enforcement from 2005 to 2013. Physical teen dating violence for high school students in Alaska is 30% higher than the national average. Alaska also has the highest rate of suicide per capita in our country. We need to be proactive versus reactive. We need to educate our youth about healthy relationships. If we do this, we can stop teen dating violence before it starts. When a healthy cycle is learned, that knowledge is then shared with friends, family, and community. Prevention holds the promise of keeping future generations of women and children safe from violence. I wish teen dating violence awareness had been mandatory curriculum for my daughter, Brianna Moore. If she knew what signs and patterns to look for, that it's okay to talk about domestic violence and where to go for help. She might be alive today. As a mother who has lost a daughter to teen dating violence, I hope them to open the eyes of others. This is a preventable epidemic. Together we can bring about change to help stop dating violence and domestic violence in our state. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Moore. And we now go to Mr. Bruce or Correction Butchmore, the father. And Butch, we'll just ask it if you're going to testify that you go over new information and not repeat old information, because we're a little short on time. Please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senate committee members, my name is Butch Moore. I'm Brianna's father. Thank you so much, Senator McGuire, for adding the dating violence and abuse to your bill. I sent out a copy earlier today, and really kind of what got this started was after Brianna was killed, I talked to four of her friends, and each of them told me that they were aware of the abuse and that they saw her 3 to 4 times with black eyes. And each one of them told me, as they cried, I didn't know what to do. I didn't know what to do or who to go to or what to say. And if I just would have done something, she might be alive today. So to item number 5 in Senator McGuire's bill, I wanted to add, it currently states measures to prevent and stop dating violence and abuse. I wanted to add, and what to do when someone witnesses or knows of a case of dating violence. And the thing that I wish, really, really wish would have happened is 10, 20 years ago, someone who lost a child or a daughter would have come forward and asked for this legislation to have been enacted. And if Brianna and her classmates, including the boys and girls all the way through school, would have been educated just like the stop, drop, and roll, and just like what to do in the event of an earthquake, there would have been a conversation, and it wouldn't have been so taboo to talk about as it seems that it is, and maybe people wouldn't be so concerned about reporting it. But hopefully what will happen is that this will be instituted, and as Cindy stated earlier, we're 3 times the national average of rape and 2.5 times of murder, men murdering women. In Rhode Island, they have a program similar to this, and they're half the national average. So I just question, you know, what is the cost not to have it as education, and not potentially not a huge amount of education, whether it's 15 minutes, a quarter, or a semester, all the way through. Eventually, our youth will learn that it's not okay for this to happen. And potentially, as soon as it's instituted, as soon as there's education, there may be a kid goes home and his or her mother has a black eye, and he says, you know what? Zero tolerance. Next time, Mom, he could kill you. And there's a call to 911, and there's a life saved maybe the first week. So I just want to thank you so much for considering the bill and adding language. And I just think it's so important, not just awareness, because Bree was aware, her friends and coworkers were aware, but it's really taking the action that counts. So thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Moore. And just to let you know, is that the bill will be back up next Tuesday, and Senator Dunleavy hopefully will be back with us, but we will certainly keep you in the communications loop. Thank you, and thank you, Mrs. Moore. We're now going to go to Mr. David Holthouse. Mr. Holthouse, are you there?
Yes, good afternoon.
Yeah, Mr. Holthouse, we're trying to maintain some flow. So if you have a couple of moments of testimony and then curtail, we'd appreciate it.
Okay, sure. I'll just say just at the outset that just because a problem isn't new doesn't mean that it's not an emergency, and doesn't mean that it doesn't require immediate action. And that, you know, it's been a little more than a month since I first testified before this committee. And it, as a survivor of childhood sexual assault and as an Alaskan parent, it matters a lot less to me what name and numbers on the top of the bill than it does that the bill contain a provision instituting that public schools provide childhood sexual abuse and sexual assault prevention and awareness education to students K through 12. And so I'm grateful to Senator McGuire for advocacy on this issue. As I am Senator Gardner, I'm happy to speak very briefly in support of the effort today. I understand there's a time constraint. So I just want to share one new development in my personal story that's occurred after and as a result of my appearance in Juneau in February, which is that as a result of the media coverage of my testimony in support of Aaron's Law, I've been contacted by three individuals who have told me that they were sexually assaulted by the same person who sexually assaulted me when I was 7 years old, or they know someone who was. They have firsthand knowledge of someone who was. And I think that had a law like this been in place when I was in second grade, I would have already received at least 2 years of education on personal body safety, bad touch, good touch, bad secrets, what to do if someone hurts me and then tells me to keep it a secret. And I think I would have told. And in the case of the three people who have contacted me in the last 6 weeks, all of them were sexually assaulted after I was. And so it's possible that, quite possible, I think, that I would have saved them from that by telling and getting this guy arrested. But as a result, all four of us are suffering lifelong repercussions. And I just, I'm curtailing my testimony. I understand the time constraint. But I just want to leave you with one more thought, which is that, you know, I've heard the argument that this is another unfunded mandate for overburdened school districts, and I think that argument's highly valid. So here's my suggestion. Is take another mandate of lesser importance away to make room for this one. I think it's that simple and it's that critical. And the second thought I want to leave you with is that childhood sexual assault is a form of murder. Because whoever you were going to be otherwise is extinguished when it happens. The damage is deep and it's lifelong and it's unforgiving. You know, the best statistics I know of are 1 in 4 girls and 1 in 6 boys sexually abused before they reach adulthood. We all know the rate in Alaska is probably higher, but let's just say for the sake of argument that it's 1 in 10. You know, I believe that if there's a profound existential threat to 10% of children in Alaska that would irrevocably harm them in a profound way, the legislature would not hesitate to act immediately. But we're accustomed to these problems, and I will include dating violence in that. We're accustomed to them. And so they don't feel like emergencies, and instead they're sort of just unspoken realities and open secrets that would make us prone to squeamishness and equivocating, and that just needs to stop. You know, let's just make sure right away, right now.
Yeah, Mr. Holdhouse, we're going to ask you to wrap up, please.
Sure. Thanks for your time.
Yeah, thank you very much, and we appreciate it, and thanks for bearing with us on the time. Now we're going to go to Mr. Robert Boyle in Ketchikan. Mr. Boyle?
Bob Boyle speaking, Superintendent of Ketchikan Gateway Borough School District. Senate Bill 37 requires mandated training and also to provide outreach programs concerning sexual abuse, assault, and prevention. You're asking the schools to do this because we're exceptionally talented and very capable as acting as the instrument of the state in causing changes to our social fiber in our communities. Public schools are the go-to agency when it comes to efficiency, quality, and creating massive changes in the society. We're very good at this. But providing the change needed in our state related to Senate Bill 37 is something I believe we will accept willingly and fully embrace. However, the bill as written is extraordinarily unfair to the public school system if it is to be implemented at no cost. You can visit the DEED website already, and you'll find a listing of mandated training that schools are required already to perform at no cost. And that's a forced divergence from what our focus is supposed to be, reading, writing, language arts. House Bill 210, mandated training. Senate Bill 137, mandated training. Alaska Statutes 1426-80, 1480.
Mr. Boyle, thank you. We understand that there are a number of unfunded mandates, so... Continue.
Okay, what this bill does is it has 17 different levels of required training, curriculum development, and retention of records. We strongly support, however, and regardless of that, the bill, and in particular Section 7, the corrections there, Section 8, the corrections there. And I'd like to point out to the committee that one thing that happens with mandated reporters is that you're then covered through Alaska statute on immunity regulations. And so by including volunteer coaches, that gives them the protection of law to be able to report more freely. And so that's something we've discussed long and quite a length here with our Board of Education. So you may want to consider that. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Bull, and thanks for bearing with us. Next, we'll go to Cake City Schools, Mr. Kevin Shipley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is Kevin Shipley. Thank you for the opportunity to testify. Yesterday, I heard a great deal of testimony in the Senate Finance Committee about cutting programs and making hard choices while we balance the budget. In CAKE, we currently partner with Sick Area Family Violence and OBK Domestic Violence Programs to provide training for students concerning domestic violence. These programs could well go away with the proposed cuts that are there. We believe that domestic violence training for our students is such an important issue that we work with our local domestic violence organizations and have our entire school participate two times a year in domestic violence and community activities and spend parts of two instructional days with our younger students. Our board is currently exploring ways to provide additional counseling services to our students, as several years ago we lost our counselor due to declining enrollment and tight school budgets. While I fully support and find large value in the implementation of this type of domestic violence law, I'm concerned that this bill creates an unfunded mandate for the school district. I believe that prioritizing our budget reduction efforts, that domestic and dating violence should be high on the list of the state, should find a way to partner with organizations or bear the cost of such a program. Unlike some other states where the Department of Education develops recommended or mandatory curriculums and trainings, the burdens of this bill fall on the local school districts. It's not imperative that we pass this or Aaron's law for a feel-good moment, but that we do it right so that the implementation is effective and all of us in Alaska communities have the resources and information necessary to fully implement a successful program. As Mr. Boyle said, there are lots of costs related to this and doing it right, but I think the state should find a way to fund this so districts can implement it.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Shipley. Now, for committee members and the public, we have Mary Bell from the Division of Behavioral Health that is online to answer questions. Catherine Monfreda, Department of Public Safety, is online to answer questions. Kate Glover from Ledge Legal is available to answer questions. And finally, Karen Benson from the Division of Healthcare Services is available to answer questions. But at this time, we'll just have you standing by in case there are questions that we can visit your professional expertise. Next, I think in the room we'll have Lori Morton. Lori, are you available? Yes, please, Lori, if you'll just join us here and introduce yourself. And we would ask brevity, but want your content.
Thank you. May I approach?
Please.
For the record, my name is Lori Morton. I'm the Executive Director of the State Council on Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault. And I wanted to let you know some of the programs that we've been able to initiate over the last 4 years in the area of prevention, particularly teen dating violence. Before I move to the teen dating violence, since we're constrained for time, I'll just let you know you have in your packet a pamphlet called Start the Conversation. This is to help parents look at ways in which they can start these difficult conversations with their children. It can be used in conjunction with the Talk Now, Talk Often cards that Senator McGuire showed you a little earlier. There's one of those in your packet. Moving along to teen dating violence, you also have in your packet some cards from a project called Stand Up, Speak Up, Alaska, in which teens across the state and focus groups came together and talked about what would be helpful for other teens to know to reduce or stop teen dating violence. And these are the helps that they came up with the cards. So there's one on dating violence, getting help, sexual rights and responsibilities, respecting yourself, how do I end a relationship, healthy relationships, and promoting respect. So these are concepts that teens themselves have said would be helpful for themselves and other teens to have. And then I would call your attention to
Lori, in the interest of time, I would just ask committee members to review the packets, and if
yes.
there are any questions, we have your contact information.
Okay, great. So this is the fourth R, and I would particularly ask you to pay attention to what we found. We did a three-year evaluation of the fourth R, which is a healthy relationships curriculum for 7th, 8th, and 9th grade, and you will see that there are promising practices proven to work here in Alaska to reduce dating violence in schools.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Uh-huh.
And members, if you have questions, Lori, I'm sure would be available, and you're living in Juneau, right?
Yes.
Okay, good. Very, very well. Yes, and next we will go to Ms. Lisa Parody. Lisa? At least if you just put yourself on the record, and you've already heard our constraints as far as time.
Certainly, Mr. Chairman. My name is Lisa Skiles Parody. I'm the Executive Director of the Alaska Council of School Administrators in the Alaska Superintendents Association. In the interest of time, I will keep this short. I do want to thank Senator McGuire and Senator Gardner and the other really dedicated legislators who have brought this child sexual abuse and sexual assault awareness forward in Alaska this session. It does address a critical concern that we all share, which is the safety of children. And I can't say it better than the two superintendents that testified to you already, and other than to just remind you that there are two really primary considerations. One is instructional time. Districts have very limited instructional time, and if you think of it, I think I explained before, as a box that's full. If you put something else in it, the things in it either have to get smaller or you have to take something out. So I appreciate the suggestions that Senator McGuire and Senator Gardner and her staff have made about how do we work creatively together to best support something like this for districts if it's decided that districts are the appropriate body to do it. The second, as you've heard a lot about, is with regard to unfunded mandates. I won't walk through those. I have had handed you the Superintendents Association resolution opposing any unfunded mandates for your consideration, and note that Section 2 of SB 37 does say specifically that any costs will reside with school districts. So we want to thank you all for the opportunity to share our concerns, recognizing that we agree this is a critical area for our students, and we stand ready to continue to work with the bill sponsors to figure out a way to best support our students with regard to these issues. So thank you for your consideration today.
Yeah, thank you, Ms. Parody. And we have one other individual. I read their name off, Karen Benson from the Division of Healthcare Services. Karen, what we're going to do, this bill will be back up next Tuesday, and you are, as I recall, within one of the divisions in healthcare service, we would ask you to make yourself available at that time. Will that work for you?
Yes, it will. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, and I apologize for the time constraints. So, as I said before, this bill will be back up next Tuesday. Hope the chairman's back, but Lauren, in wrap-up? Nothing. Thank you very much for.
Yeah, thank
that,
you.
Yeah, you got off light today. You know, normally the committee's pretty stern, so you did well. And we look forward to seeing you next Tuesday. Thank you very
thank
much.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Yep. Okay, so with that, we will close public testimony for today, but public testimony will remain open for next Tuesday, if you will, and we'll set this bill aside. Okay, Senate Bill 89.
So, do you know how far my Beth needs here to present it, right?
Huh? Are you at Ann's right now?
Huh?
At Ann's,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, sorry.
The Senate Education Committee will come back to order. Senator Stevens had to go. He has a Ledge Council meeting coming up shortly, and some of us will have to dash off to that. We have some number of moments ready. We have a bill to be introduced in its CS form. Senator Diesel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move the CS for Senate Bill 89, version 29, LS0735/P-PAPA, before the committee as a working document.
Thank you, Senator Geisel. I will object for discussion. Bethany, would you please come up? You're the presenter, right?
Senator Huggins, yes. Unexpectedly, but yes.
Yeah. Well, you know, we all get called to arms sometimes. Go to the sound of the guns. So this bill, as I understand it, was scheduled to be heard back in March. Time didn't allow that in scheduling, but we're back up today. And this bill will be heard today briefly for introduction, and we'll go as far as we can. And then some of us have got to go to the other commitments not later than 5. So at 4:54, we're going to be adjourning. So with that, if you put yourself on the record, and CS for Senate Bill 89 is before us.
Thank you, Senator Huggins. I'm Bethany Markham, aide to Senator Mike Dunleavy. The committee substitute for Senate Bill 89 is a bill to ultimately declare and codify parental rights for Alaskan parents. It may not seem that parental rights would need to be put down in state statute, but it is the case that sometimes parents are pitted against the government in certain situations, and so this bill is an attempt to rebalance the relationship and ensure that parents do have the ultimate authority in directing the upbringing and education of their children. It does this by asking school districts to, through their school boards, adopt policies which accommodate a variety of things, allowing parents to review the content of various activities and courses and such that students might be participating in, allowing parents to object to and withdraw their children from state-mandated assessments and tests. If parents have concerns about content related to reproduction and sex education, they are allowed to hold their children, withdraw their children through permission from those classes, and that absence would not be counted. Would not be counted as unlawful, so it would be a permissible absence. Parents would also be allowed to withdraw their children for religious holidays, and again, the absence would be counted as a lawful absence. And then as far as the CS, there's a couple of changes. Originally, the bill included health in it, and in discussions with the department, it was determined that health was too broad and would include physical education, and so health was removed in the CS. And the other thing that was added to the CS was a section that allowed parents to withdraw their children whenever the content would concern inquiries into personal or private family affairs. Again, the parent would be able to object to and withdraw their children, and the absence would be counted as a lawful absence for the child. There's also a section in the back, sections 2 and 3, which existing statute allowed parents to, actually required parents to opt in to provide written permission before children participated in questionnaires and surveys. And so the committee substitute for 89 actually removes certain language so that instead of just certain questionnaires and surveys, all questionnaires and surveys that are administered to children would require opt-in permission by parents. And I think that's a summary of Senate Bill 89, the committee substitute for it.
Yeah, thank you, Ms. Markham. Any comments or questions from committee members? Yeah, you know, if I might, you know, we were just hearing in Senate Bill 37 and the business of what we need to do to protect the kids. And, you know, there, I can tell you, some of my friends and my wife will tell you, she's a principal, that but parents have rights and they have responsibilities. And they say, you know, that's my job. And so we have to be sensitive to that. It's hugely important. And, you know, it's interesting to me the business of history in our schools. And, you know, my wife, as I said, is a principal. And it makes her angry because she's a Army veteran helicopter pilot that it was hard to get our kids out of school to go to Veterans Day. And because I believe, and she believes, that it's kind of a little bit of history to be taught there, and kids recognize that. And I remember not too long ago when our youngest son was still in high school, he was asking me about, what's this Veterans Day? Tell me what that's all about. And I said, what you have to remember is one of these days, your son will be asking you that. Give you an answer. So with that, are there any other questions? And we would also ask you to, any personal touches you want to put on this bill.
Senator Huggins, this is a bill that Senator Dunleavy feels very strongly about, but I also, I'm not a parent, but because I'm not a parent, we tried to become parents, but we were not able to, but because we were not able to become parents, I've kind of felt that personally, I can spend my time advocating on behalf of parents so that they can spend time with their children and spend their time raising their children. It's one of the reasons that I also feel strongly and passionately about parents' rights and the rights of parents to direct the upbringing of their children and protect their children in the ways that they feel are most appropriate. And to educate them on issues such as we talked about with Senate Bill 37 that's been proposed.
Yeah, and you know, it just, when our kids went to Mat-Su School District and good experience and got you know, relatively good education, but it's an interesting phenomena in Mat-Su that the largest school is Mat-Su Central, which is homeschool and correspondence school. And I guarantee you, if you did a census of parents, there's a reason that those parents made that choice for their kids. But it's a choice. But what we're doing, and that's one of the things I love about your boss, Senator Dunleavy. He's one of those that has been on both sides of the fence, and he has good instincts, and I'm proud of him for him bringing the bill. And I quite frankly support most of the elements that I've heard him discuss previously.
Yes, Senator Huggins, I do believe also it's the case that if parents are reminded, perhaps is the right word, of their rights and their liberties regarding their children, that might even encourage them to be more involved and stay more involved in their children's lives. Because sometimes we hear about parents who aren't as involved and don't necessarily know about the day-to-day of their children's lives. And in situations where they're able to review the content, for example, of what's going on in their classrooms, that might encourage them to stay more involved and be more aware and therefore develop closer relationships.
Good. Senator Giesel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to comment. I know my husband and I made choice about our children's education, but I also volunteered at a school that was also a choice that parents made. And I offered, I guess you would call it sort of a good touch, bad touch type course. Parents opted whether their child attended, and parents attended with their children. And that was really the most impactful, I think, Mr. President, Mr. Chairman, because then the parents knew and could reinforce later. And that was really the most productive. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. Senator Gardner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Today we heard a lot of grim statistics and a very high level about child abuse, about dating violence, about sexual violence, about numbers of kids who have experienced some of these things, but also about what they did about it, who they talked to, what the friends knew to do or didn't know to do, what they did with the information about what was going on in people's personal lives that were shared with them. So one of the questions I have about the proposal in front of us is how are we able to gather that information to know? For example, the young lady who was killed by her boyfriend and several of her friends knew about it. How do we know they knew? because they told her parents. But we know in the world of teenagers, they talk to each other. And if we want to know, what do our kids know about not just our own children, but what do teenagers know about what's going on in their school community and in their social lives? We ask them, and schools ask them. I mean, I worry about not being able to get the information anonymously. I mean, not asking, you know, who do you know who's been hit by a boyfriend, but how many of your friends have been hit to your knowledge? You know, if we can't ask them without spending time and effort to get parent permission to allow us to ask the kids what they know about their friends or people's dating experience in their building, do we tie ourselves up in knots that we can't get information and we don't know? Is that a concern?
Through the chair, Senator Gardner, it's certainly a concern because we don't want to see any more of the kind of situations like we heard in the previous part of the testimony today. But it is the situation for parents to make those decisions for their children as far as what's best and who best for them to reveal that information to. It also is the case that there are plenty of parents and families who will still choose to participate in those questionnaires and surveys, and so there will be data available. I don't believe that we're going to see such an overwhelming number of parents who choose not to participate to invalidate the data. But it certainly could be the case that after discussions with parents and children, if they choose to participate at a certain age, a child may decide that they want to participate on their own and have that discussion with their child. But it's important that they have those discussions with their parents, and this will facilitate those sorts of discussions.
Thank you.
Yeah, we're just about done. You know, unfortunately, and I just respond to that a little bit myself, you know, our society is pretty sad commentary. I mean, in some places, maybe not in Juneau, but in larger metropolitan areas, a young lady gets beat to death, screaming loudly, and lots of adults watching it and, quote, don't want to get involved. We're working on legislation for immunity for responders, because we want to litigate people that do something. Somebody wants some money from them because they find a loophole in a lawyer that chases ambulances, for lack of a better term. But, you know, for young people, unfortunately, or I say unfortunately, it's just a kind of a semi-fact, is that, you know, the duty to not rat on your fellow peers is very compelling, kind of strange, but unfortunately it's one of those phenomena of society that's a strong calling in the native sense of masturbation. But with that, unless there's anything else, we have two people online. Brief at ease. And we'll come back to order. I have removed my objections to the CS or Senate Bill 89, and we're going to limit testimony to a grand total of 1 minute each, and we'll go first to Mr. Mike Coons. Mike, be brief.
Thank you, sir. I'll tell you what, I'll call back tomorrow. I got a 2 minute.
Okay, you're a good man. We'll be back with you. Sorry about the time constraints. Mr. Scott McManus.
Yes, this is Scott McManus. I'm the Assistant Superintendent for Alaska Gateway School District, and I'll be brief. I know you guys have a busy schedule and appreciate the time. I just wanted to say that I appreciate the intent behind both of the bills that we just heard. I would like to say that to me there seems to be a complicating factor between S. Bill 37 and 39, whereby we're being asked to provide training, for example, as good touch, bad touch, or healthy relationships, and we have a two-week window in which to get permission to do that in, where we have to give active permission from parents, which is really going to put a damper on things in terms of time and money and the time it takes to put those permissions together so that they're active. Our parents do have participation in the content of the curriculum in their classroom. We always allow them to exclude their students. We have all of our curriculum available for review at any time. I think that there needs to be some sort of balance struck. So, in brief, that's my shortened term.
Okay, thank you very much, Mr. McManus. And for anyone that wants to testify, we're sorry about the brevity, but we do have follow-on, and these are announced meetings. And as you see, we have attrition that set in, so we have two remaining members here. Senator Giesel, thanks for sticking with us. Any final comments?
No, thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Yep. Okay, with that, we appreciate your smiling and cooperation in that, and we're adjourned.